This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel of VSiN will join us to break down game one of the NBA Finals. It happened again. Here we are again, the Indiana Pacers, with a shocking, stunning come-from-behind win. Stop me if you've heard that before. They win game one, 111-110. A crazy ending and just a remarkable run here and comebacks for the Pacers. And, you know, as the game's going on, you always think, you know, what's the theme of the show? What am I going to say? How do I summarize this? To me, for the most part, it was a wire-to-wire OKC win. They felt in control, in command, up 12 at the half. You know, it's I think the first score I saw, because I never knew when the game was going to start. I was watching baseball, doing some other things. I see 10-10. Okay, I can catch up. Pretty quickly, 16-10. Then it was up to 10. And I would say OKC led by 10 or so plus the majority of the game. And there was a little run from Indy, I think made it 92-86. OKC expanded again. It never felt like OKC was threatened. I was watching this game. It reminded me a little bit of Duke Houston in the NCAA tournament, where you're watching the last few minutes, and at least me, I'm thinking, oh man, they're coming back. They might cover the spread. Same thing Knicks Pacers game one, actually, too. Not really thinking the outright result is in jeopardy. And 96-82 is when Caruso got the lay-in, the foul. He falls to the ground, goes to the free throw, and misses the free throw, but no big deal. You don't even think anything of it. They're up 14, less than 9 minutes to go. OKC's the better team. Their home place is going crazy. Their defense, I thought, at times was just outstanding. The quickness, the turnovers. Toppin hits a three. Turner hits some incredible shots. And when Turner banked that three in from a spot where you know he's not trying to bank it, you knew if you had OKC, you're not covering this. It's like, uh-oh. And I will say, betting against Indiana is one of the more unpleasant feelings in betting. It's just, it feels like every shot's going in. It feels like every three is going in. It's starting to feel reminiscent of the Heat 2 years ago when they made the finals, where they just kept defying the odds. This team's much better than that Heat team, but just not fun to bet against. So Pacers getting 11 here. OKC minus 11 for game two. You know that. You know, the line is always going to adjust for the desperation, all that stuff. I have absolutely zero interest in laying 11 points against this Indiana Pacers team. I don't care what the score is. It could be down. It could be a 40-point game with, you know, 90 seconds left. I'm not going to feel good about that. I'm not laying 11. I don't care. Again, you win the game by 40, you win it by 40. It would only be Pacers or nothing for me. I still think OKC is going to win the series. But look, if you root for the Pacers, you're not all that invested in what I have to think, because I thought this was OKC in four. And you know what? For most of the game, I watched it and didn't think that my prediction was outlandish. The late Pacers run, even though I didn't think they were going to get over the top until the very end, and you knew, I knew, I think most people just assumed, oh, that shot's going in. That shot's going in from Haliburton. Tough spot for OKC because you're only up one. You can't foul and put him on the line for two free throws. And give Haliburton credit. He does this a lot. Left basically no time, 0.3 seconds, 0.3 of a second. Didn't give enough time for a shot on the other end. Only that, you know, half-hearted attempt at a tip-in when you really can't do anything. He timed it perfectly. He went for the win, and he has just become an unbelievable clutch-time performer. Give the Pacers all the credit in the world. And when the road team wins game one, it looks like he'd expect a longer series. I know Sixers-Lakers, what was it, 2001 it was. The Sixers beat the Lakers in game one. That was the only game of the playoffs the Lakers lost in that postseason. Lakers won the next four, so it does happen. Look, I've given up trying to, make predictions, count Indy out. I'm not doing it anymore. I don't know. OKC, I would, if you asked me to just tell you the truth, hey, you think, who do you think's winning this year? I still think OKC is winning it, but I do think it has to enter your head now, the thought process that maybe, just maybe, Indy is just one of these teams of destiny that you see once in a while that, you know, defies all odds and just, it's almost like a sports movie. Crazy endings, crazy comebacks, can't explain it. Just a lot of fun to watch. So, whew, man, can't believe it. It's hard, it's hard because there's recency bias to rank the four Indiana comebacks. The Knicks one in game one, I still think is the best because there was so little time left. This one, the Bucks round one, because there's only 30 seconds left in a 7-point game. And then the Cavs one was eight with a minute and change left too. So it's very hard to parse these, but they are all A-plus all-time comebacks. And they got all of them here in the span of a month. It's just, oof, unbelievable. Unbelievable. OKC now minus 275 to win the series if you're looking to jump in with a better number. So OKC to sweep. I have a feeling I don't think that's going to happen. It's not going to quite get home. So, man, this is why I noticed this when people were picking the series. A lot of OKC in five. There's mostly OKC in five. I think, out of 10 people, seven, eight would have had OKC in five. That was the consensus. There's a reason people don't want to pick sweeps. First of all, it's dismissive and it seems disrespectful to the team you have losing. And if they ever lose the series or win game one, you look like an idiot. I look like an idiot right now picking a sweep, but won't be the first time, won't be the last time. So Pacers win game one, incredible game. Let's talk to JVT. That is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him weekdays, Monday through Friday. Money Moves, where he does a fantastic job breaking down the NBA, and he joins us again. Does a great job covering the NBA with us. And JVT, this is your podcast, man. I don't know what to say anymore. I picked this sweep like an idiot, and part of my explanation was, I think people are just not explanation, but logic was, I think people are just afraid to pick the sweep. That's why you're seeing OKC in five, because you look bad or it's disrespectful. Well, this is why you don't pick a sweep, because you lose game one, you look like an idiot. But I'm stunned. Caruso 96-82 misses a free throw, no big deal. Could have made it a 15-point game, and next thing you know, the Pacers do it again. What? Where did this turn? How did this happen once again?
I mean, it's hard not to start with Tyrese Haliburton yet again, right? I just, it's incredible. It is something that we should remember for a very long time, this run that he has been on. Tyrese Haliburton with his fourth game tying or game winning shot in the final 1.3 seconds of the fourth quarter or overtime in this postseason, all with the Indianapolis or Indy Pacers down. Game five versus the Bucks, he hits it with 1.3 seconds left. Game two versus the Cavs, he hits it with 1.1 seconds left. The buzzer beater against the Knicks to tie the game. And then tonight, he's absolutely incredible. There are people who say that clutch does not exist. Tyrese Haliburton is evidence, is counter evidence to that point. The guy is unreal every time the game is on the line. And it's hard not to start there. But I think if you're talking about where this started to turn for Oklahoma City, or what really helped turn this for Indy, I think you go to the turnovers, right? They had, I believe, 20 turnovers in the first half, if I remember correctly. They had just five in the second half. They scored just 45 points in the first half. They had 66 in the second half. They really figured out their offense. They figured out that they can kind of bully a little bit of a smaller OKC team, beat them up on the glass really bad. 43 defensive rebounds for Indy in this game. I thought like those were the big moments. And then you had some of the guys show up, right? Pascal Siakam with a big block at one point. I just thought there were so many different things, not any one moment for me, but so many different things that led up to it. But I think you start with Haliburton and you get to this offense, it's just not turning the ball over anymore, not giving free runouts and free opportunities to OKC and letting them hit their offense in stride. And it really made a big difference.
Did you feel this comeback was, I don't know, sustainable, repeatable, or I just look I, when you pick, the other team, it makes like it sounds like you're making excuses. I thought the Turner, what was it, the banked in three. There was another one where it was a loose ball and ends up, anyone could have had it, 50-50 ball. I think Nembhard hit a three. It did feel like, I don't know, just the ball kind of bounced their way on top of things. Do you think that's fair, or is that dismissive of Indy?
I mean, I think it's, you could probably say that to an extent. There was a couple of things that went in their direction. But I think you just give them credit. Like, I think you mentioned it there too, that the fact that Andrew Nembhard down 108-102 with less than 2 minutes left to go says, no, I'm going to go one-on-one with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I'm going to bury a three at his grill to cut this thing down, right? Like, they deserve credit for doing things like that. So I think, just like with anything, Will, I know our conversations on social media and other places, they have to be in extremes. I think there is truth to everything. There's probably a couple of things that, you know what? It went the Pacers' way. And does that happen again for another game? Yeah, probably not. Do they shoot 46% from three again? Probably not. We'll see. Because again, inherently small sample size, that can just continue to happen. But I do think they deserve credit. And I think that we should talk about too. So this was pointed out by Caitlin Cooper, does a great job covering the Pacers, and they did this in the Cavaliers series. And I thought that this was eerily reminiscent of that too. And after it was pointed out, you could see it all over the place. So what the Pacers did against the Cavaliers was they were letting Donovan Mitchell go wild. Remember how many great games Donovan Mitchell had in that series from a scoring standpoint? but everybody else was mute. Everybody else was quiet. They did such a good defensive job, the Pacers did, on all the other players around Donovan Mitchell. And that was the same thing here. Nobody else really looked comfortable in this game for Oklahoma City. Jalen Williams was 6-19 from the floor. Chet Holmgren was abysmal around the rim. You look at the three-point shooting for the Oklahoma City Thunder, Lu Dort hitting 5 of their 11 three-point makes. Outside of that, nobody really contributed from a scoring standpoint. I love Cason Wallace, but he was still very quiet himself with 6 points after being thrust into the starting lineup and minus 13 in his minutes on the floor. I thought the Pacers' defensive game plan of pretty much staying at home, contesting shots with some ferocity at the rim, especially against Chet Holmgren, and allowing Shea just, hey, you know what? You go nuts, but we're going to continue to play our game, and we're going to make sure and nobody else can contribute to this win. And I thought it was a brilliant defensive game plan.
What'd you think of the Siakam call that was reviewed at the end there?
So I'll be completely honest. I did not see that. I was listening to that on the radio. I had to step out for a second and come back in.
Just lie. Say great call, terrible call. I mean, come on.
All right. Well, I'll have to go back and watch it. So you'll have to tell me. But I will say that it did sound when I was reading or when I was listening to it that was one of the bigger moments in turning that. And it's a point too. Really quickly, look, Carlisle does a great job with this. He did this in the series against New York, remember, where he was just saving his challenges for the ends of these games just in case he needs them. And he yet again showing his coaching acumen, having these things ready to go so that he can get some really big calls overturned down the stretch. I mean, again, it speaks to how good of a coach is. Kelly and I talked about this going into the series. Where was the coaching edge? You had to say Carlisle because he's been there, he's done that, and he has shown that he has not lost a step at all in this postseason. And I think that was another big moment for him.
As Halliburton is dribbling the clock down, as it seems like he's done so many times this postseason, what is your confidence level percentage that this ball is going in? Mine was, I don't know, 70-80%. I mean, I just expected it to go in. Did you feel the same way?
Yes. I hated it, but I was like, this dude's going to hit this again, isn't he? Like, it's so crazy, man. Like, you shouldn't. You know, there's going to be a lot of people with no stake in this whatsoever that just want to laugh at people when they're wrong, going like, ha ha, you know, you should have known. Like, really? Should we have? Like, again, like all this improbable nonsense. They had the graphic where it was like most playoff game tying or game winning shots in the final whatever amount of seconds. And it was like Reggie Miller and LeBron James, but that was over the course of their careers. And he's almost up there with the shots he's made in this postseason. It's nuts, man. And you just have to tip your cap and say, you know what? Sometimes some guys, I guess, are just made for the moment, and Halliburton seems to be that dude, man. It's nuts. He deserves so much credit for doing this sort of stuff and performing in that moment. I am amazed.
I am hosting VSiN Primetime Friday night with Matt Eumann, 7 to 11. I predicted Thunder sweep. Eumann's predicted Pacers in Thunder in 6, and he also took, I think, Thunder in 7 at plus money. So he was much higher on the Pacers, so I am going to hear it. I know I'm going to hear it, and I just have to take my medicine, but I don't know, for 90% of the game, I thought I was, you know, this was going how I expected it to go. But
yeah, it's funny. If the shoe was on the other foot, Matt wouldn't want to talk about it. So
that's possible.
Yeah, it's possible. It's a certainty. No, dude, look, I think to your point, so like I have Thunder in 5. So like technically, am I still alive? Yes. Am I hoping for, you know, a Heat Thunder series when they met that time with KD and, you know, Russell Westbrook and James Harden where they won game one and then the Heat went on to rip off 4 straight wins and win the series? That's certainly possible. I would say that the Indiana Pacers have shown and proven that they are much better than the overall collective believes them to be. And so I don't think that it is likely I'm going to get those bets to come in. But to your point about picking them in a sweep or whatever it is, this Thunder team is very good, probably a little overvalued by the market overall. I mean, it's why I kept saying, too, when we talked about the series price, Will, I don't know if you and I had this discussion, but when I saw the prices, I saw books that didn't want Thunder money. I didn't see a price that was accurate. I just saw a price that was deterring people away from piling in on the Oklahoma City Thunder. And so maybe there was a skosh of overvaluing them, but there's still certainly a reality where they can go off and win 4 straight potentially, but the role players have to be better. Like, there's no question about that. It was such a balanced effort for the most part from Indy. I keep wanting to go to Indianapolis because I have Anthony Richardson on the brain. It was such a balanced effort from the Pacers. It's got to be more balanced from Oklahoma City. There's no question.
Does this Pacer team remind you a little bit of the Heat from 2 years ago? I know I feel that way where you just pick against them, you pick against them again. At some point, you know what? I'm not going to put my hand on the stove. They can win or lose without me. I'm just not getting involved. I'm not fading them. Is there a little bit of an element to that?
No, only because I was, and eventually was proven right. I was adamant that Heat team sucked. Like, I don't think this Pacers team sucks, right? I think they're good. Do I think that they have...
I have bank statements that differ, by the way. They cost me a ton of money. My goodness.
Yeah, well, and until they got to the finals and they flamed out, right? So, like, that's kind of my whole premise is that eventually it did wear out, and they looked like an awful team against the Denver Nuggets that year. But to your overall point, you know, question them at your own risk. Indiana continues to pull this off time and time again. But I think that this Pacers team is actually like legitimately good, and they deserved to come out of the Eastern Conference. You can talk about the improbability of some of these wins, but I think at the end of the day, they were going to be and are the best team. They're deserving favorite to come out of the East next year. So I think they're like legitimate good. That Heat team, I mean, you look at some of the ridiculous things that they did in that run to get to the NBA Finals. That was absolutely ridiculous and will probably never be replicated again. There was a reason why they had a Game 7 against Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals when they were down 3-0. Or up 3-0, excuse me.
And they handled the toughness that is Madison Square Garden in New York, which I know you had your questions about.
Who was it? What was the? There was an analyst that said that they were going to be intimidated by Madison Square Garden.
I'm not sure, and I don't know if I remembered. If I forget, was it?
I mean,
Pierce, Keyshawn Johnson, one of those guys.
Yeah, you know what? It was Keyshawn Johnson. But I will say this, like to the point of unsustainability and spinning this forward, I will say too, by the way, the game two line is ridiculous. It's Thunder minus 11 at some spots. That's absolute insanity. You couldn't get me to get in there at minus 11 with your money. And Cirque is actually at 11.5 right now. So this is pretty nuts. But I will say to the point of sustainability, you look at some of the key statistics from a game like today, you see a Thunder team that was, let me do my math here really quickly. Plus, what are we talking about here? 18 in the turnover margin and ended up taking, I think, what, 12, 17 more, 18 more field goal attempts than the Indiana Pacers. Generally, it's not about covering. You're going to win those games more often than not. So if you're able to do that again to an extent, Indiana is probably somewhat in danger of going back home with this season or with the series evened up. And it's just human nature. Hey, you took one. Now we get to go back home. We have home court advantage. But obviously not going to be a shock if they go back 1-1. But to your point of can they continue to do this, this box score, if you simulate it 1,000 times, more often than not, you're probably coming away with a straight-up loss at the very least.
What is a revised series prediction from you? It sounds like you're – I don't know if you're going to go OKC in 5, probably OKC in 6, just reading between the lines here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is most likely now OKC in 6. I still have my OKC in 5 tickets. Those aren't going anywhere. So I will still say that, you know, look, that was my pre-series prediction. I will stick to it. It can still happen. So, but I think obviously the most likely outcome right now, if you're still somebody who is high on the Thunder in the grand scheme of things, you're expecting this to be Thunder in 6. But as I told Dustin and Patrick when I was on with them earlier today, I kind of hope I'm wrong. I hope this is a long series. This is a fun game. This was a good game. And both of these teams are two of the best teams in the NBA. And we're getting, it seems, a pretty good series on its surface. So I would still say Thunder in 6 is the most likely outcome. I still believe that they can win in 5, but we'll see if that's the case.
Unreal. Great game. And it does give this final some juice. I was worried, just, you know, big picture standpoint, 4 or 5 day layoff, 2 small markets, minus 700 favorite, you know, what the rating's going to be like, you know, not that I care what the handle's like for the books, but I don't know. Did this series have juice just to the, you know, the average fan? You and I are going to watch no matter what, but now it does. They needed to get one on the road. I think down 2-0 would have been a disaster. That would have been a death sentence, but here we go. We've got a series. I still like OKC, but you know what? I don't think anyone who roots for the Pacers really cares what I think at this point. Jeez.
Nah, dude, if you're a fan of the, I can't imagine if you're a fan of the Pacers, like what that's like, you know, how excited you must feel, how great this must feel being here. But again, to the point of just this run, and even if they go on to lose the series, even in 5, we should remember this run for a really long time because of what they were able to pull off over and over again. How about this from NBA PR? The Pacers tied the biggest fourth quarter comeback, 15 points in NBA finals since 1971. Since 1971, because Indiana took its first lead with 0.3 seconds left in the fourth quarter, since 71, this is the latest into any NBA Finals game that a team took its first lead. Like, this is, if you look at this run for Indiana, their run is just littered with facts and statistics like that. And it's incredible. You have nothing to do but to tip your cap and say, dude, this team is absolutely bonkers.
I'm going to ask a question. I think a lot of people are wondering, if you're only watching the playoffs, or you're more of a playoff fan, how the hell was this the 4 seed? How are they 10 and 15? Like, what happened? How did we get here?
Well, I think they just got better as the season went along. I also think, like, for a while, remember, like, at the end of last year, Tyrese Halliburton, and not the end of last year, halfway through last year, Tyrese Halliburton got hurt. It was like a pretty serious injury, and I thought for a while it took him a bit to really kind of shake off what was going on with him, whatever it was. And the early portion of the year, through the first 40 games or so, he really wasn't playing particularly well. If you look at some of the numbers for him in terms of shooting and whatnot, he was only shooting 36% from beyond the arc in the first 40 games, 44% from the floor, averaging only about 18 points per game. Like, those are all fine numbers for the most part. But this is a team that I think was really still finding its footing, and they really started to get hot around January, as we kind of all know at this point right now. And he really, I thought, started to turn things around at that point from about mid-January on. And I think that was a big reason why when they fell like the way they did in terms of the seeding. And look, the top of the Eastern Conference, we should not forget, is still pretty good, right? Like the Cavaliers, the Knicks were a good regular season team. The Celtics were obviously the Celtics for a while. But we really saw him take off in the last 30 games or so. So I just read you those splits for the first 40 games. The last 30 games, his scoring average went up to 20 points per game. He was shooting 40% from beyond the arc, 43% to be exact, and 51% from the floor. I think it just was a matter of Halliburton getting more comfortable and getting his legs back under him. And he's a big reason why they're here now.
If Indy wins this series, does OKC grow tired of SGA and trade him back to the Clippers?
Yes, of course. For a second round pick, I think the Clippers would be willing to take that deal. But I will say, you know, it kind of got me excited watching them lose this game. Even though I have them to win the series in five and whatnot, in the back of my mind, I immediately went back to one of the things I've been saying for a while now, which is, I don't care if the Thunder win every game in this postseason moving forward, you should go get Giannis. If they lose this series to the Indiana Pacers, watch out, because they should put, I mean, again, I think even if they win the next four, they should call about Giannis. But if they lose this series, oh brother, I cannot wait to see what that phone call is going to come so quick. And they're going to go get Giannis immediately, especially if they lose the series. Again, they should do it if they win, but man, would that be crazy.
Yes. And obviously the Lakers trump pretty much every offer with, their assortment of assets, as we know, but,
correct.
Yes, man. I'm still stunned. I usually don't do this podcast like this, where I can't even collect my thoughts. I just can't believe what I witnessed again. And the surprising part is I shouldn't be surprised. I don't know. Crazy.
No, you're right. Like it is wild. I do love the immediate hindsight folks who are just like, see, you shouldn't have doubted them. Like I'm sure you were loaded up on Pacers money line.
Yeah,
throughout
great
that
point.
Entire, right? Great point. I'm sure you were loaded up to the gills on Pacers.
What was
money.
The highest money line? Do you know?
I did not see when they were down 15. I'll have to find
one or something.
Yeah, it was probably in that range. So I'm sure a lot of people.
You're gonna start having to give them the Kansas City Chiefs treatment, where you know they're down 14 and it's even right. money. You can't skew it towards a normal team because a 15-point deficit is nothing to them.
Dude, it's absolutely crazy, man. And they deserve credit for it. I will say really quickly a couple of things. So I mentioned like the assist market. So that's going to be interesting to see. Series leader in assists, Williams, Halliburton, and one other all have six. I think it was Nembhard. So that's going to be interesting to see where that market is priced now as we move forward. So it's Nembhard, Halliburton, and Jalen Williams, who all have six assists. So keep that in mind. The other thing that I was going to note, so this was one thing that I was wrong and right about at the same time. So I don't think Isaiah Hartenstein has a place in this series, and he only got 17 minutes today, but he made the most of them. He had 9 and 9. His points, rebounds, and assists was at 17.5, and he finished with 18 in 17 minutes. I still think that's a pretty strong angle, so we'll see what the market does with his props moving forward too. But that'll be something I'm watching, because they ended up moving away from him, and I don't know if maybe because they get scared because they got beat up on the glass and they put him back out there, but Hartenstein's role is going to be pretty interesting as we move forward.
JVT, appreciate it, man. Money moves. What Stormy's back from Italy. She's kind of flaunting it, right? That's pretty much the theme.
Yep, she's back. We're going to be in Omaha next week for the College World Series, so that'll be fun.
Nice flex.
Yep. Hey, man, it's on the company dime, so I'm down with it. I'm down to clown. We'll be broadcasting from Rocco's, so if you, by any chance, have anybody listening to this that'll be in Omaha next week, come say what's up.
JVT, appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, dude.
All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. Goldboys.com is where you get the Discord. See you Monday.